You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
The Supreme Court has spoken, and the pharmacy profession may never be the same. We'll talk about that next on Locked On Pharmacy.
You are listening to the Locked On Pharmacy podcast, the insider's view into the world of pharmacy.
Hello, this is Frank Fortin for the American Pharmacists Association. On December 10th, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its eagerly awaited decision in Rutledge versus PCMA, the case which asked the court to determine whether states have the right to regulate the business practices of pharmacy benefit managers. And the verdict was a resounding yes. By an 8-0 margin, the justices ruled that an Arkansas law regulating how PBMs and pharmacies interact with each other may be enforced and was not preempted by the federal law known as ERISA. With more than 36 other states debating or passing such legislation, this wasn't just about Arkansas. It could have nationwide impact. In fact, the CEOs of national pharmacy organizations were unanimous in hailing the decision. We have three guests here to discuss the case. First, Representative Buddy Carter of Georgia. He's been an advocate for pharmacists since his early days in Congress, and no wonder. He's the only pharmacist serving in the 116th session of Congress, and he owns three pharmacies in Georgia. So he has firsthand knowledge of the damage that PBMs have done to the pharmacy profession. I'm also joined by John Vinson, the CEO of the Arkansas Pharmacists Association. We spoke with John a couple of months ago on the eve of oral arguments. Now we bring him back here to talk about what the ruling means. The case began with an Arkansas law, and it was Arkansas who persevered to bring the case to the nation's highest court. And finally, I'm joined by Scott Knorr, the CEO of the American Pharmacists Association, the largest association in the country representing all of pharmacy. Scott has written and spoken extensively about the negative impact of PBMs on the profession, patients, and employers. So, Congressman, welcome to the program. Really a pleasure to have you here. You're well known for your work advocating for pharmacists and their patients. What do you think this ruling could mean for pharmacies around the country?
Well, there's no question about it. This is big. This is a big, big win for pharmacists. And I say that for a number of reasons. First of all, as a independent retail pharmacist and the owner of independent retail pharmacies, I know firsthand, and I've experienced firsthand just how tough it is and just how unfair the practices are. So I've seen it from that perspective, the real life perspective, if you will. Secondly, keep in mind, I was a member of the Georgia General Assembly for 10 years, and we passed many laws governing PBMs that were good laws that did not apply to plans under ERISA. The only ones they really applied to were the state health benefit plans, but that was okay, that helped, but really this ruling and this development is so big for pharmacy. And if I could say, I don't know if anyone on the podcast or any of y'all have ever listened or sat in on a Supreme Court hearing. This was my first experience for it. And I because of COVID, we couldn't attend, but I sat in on it. And I have to tell you, I was super impressed. Those justices are some smart people. They really are. And, you know, our guy representing Arkansas, and let me just divert for just a second and say that Arkansas deserves a lot of credit here. They have done an outstanding job. And for them to take this up to the Supreme Court, especially after it was rejected by the Eighth Circuit, we just owe them a great deal of gratitude. And I applaud them for what they've done and their Attorney General Leslie and all of them have done a great job. But when Arkansas presented their case to the Supreme Court, I mean, they ripped him up one side and down the other. And when it was over, I just thought to myself, we don't stand a chance. And then the other side came up and they did the same exact thing. They ripped him up one side and down the other. And I said, well, maybe we do stand a chance. And I was just so impressed at how well the Supreme Court handled this. And of course, I was delighted when it was an 8-0 decision.
So it really does seem to open the door for some action on state level. Do you think there's any opportunity for doing something on the federal level because of this ruling, or are those completely separate issues?
Well, I think it will be more apt for the states, and I think that it would pertain to them more. I think there are 38 states now that have laws on the books dealing with PBMs. I think you'll see them expand in the number of states. I think that you'll see a number of all the states now to start this. And listen, I believe in state rights and state sovereignty, so that's okay with me. Now, it will mean something to us on the federal level, and that's important to note as well. I think it will give us more clout, more ammunition, if you will, to state our case whenever we go before HHS to promulgate a new rule or regulation, or whenever we are trying to pass legislation that'll be codified that deals with PBM. So I think, it's good all around, but I think more so for the states, it's more significant.
You know, you mentioned your personal experience with pharmacies and pharmacy ownership. As an owner, you've experienced this, and what are your APHA members from around the country, and specifically in Georgia, what have they been telling you about their experience with PBMs and all their practices that have made life difficult for them?
Well, we all have experienced. I mean, regardless of whether you're a pharmacy owner or just a staff pharmacist, you know what's happening, and you know the practices that PBMs have been undertaking, and the reimbursement's been horrible. They've been redirecting patients, with mail order and with unfair practices that they have been practicing and that they've been undertaking. It's had a negative effect on independent retail pharmacists. In fact, over 2,000 pharmacies closed, and almost 4% of all pharmacies in the independent pharmacies in the nation have closed. So the news is good. But keep in mind, yes, it's good for pharmacies, but it's good for patient care, and it's good for the patients. And that's the key. That's why we're there, is for the patients. And this will mean that there'll be hopefully lower prescription drug prices. And I think that it will be that. I think that's what it will result in.
Congressman, one last question. How can APHA work with you in order to move things forward and make a better experience for patients and for pharmacists?
Well, certainly advocacy is extremely important, and particularly grassroots advocacy. I tell pharmacists all the time, as well as just citizens, invite your congressperson to your practice setting. Show them the value that you bring to the healthcare system. We as pharmacists underestimate our value a lot, and we don't do enough in really helping to people to understand just how valuable our services are. Look, 95% of all Americans live within 5 miles of a pharmacy. Pharmacists are the most accessible healthcare professionals out there, and we do deliver a valuable healthcare service, and it is important to our customers. So I would encourage all the pharmacists to invite their members of Congress, whether it be your senator or your congressman, to your practice setting. Let them talk to your patients. Your patients are going to be your biggest fans, and they're going to be the ones who let everyone know just how valuable the pharmacist is to their healthcare.
And I imagine this would be applied to any issue, whether it's DIR fees or provider status or any other of the big battles that we're fighting along the line.
No question about it. All of those are things that are causing copays and percentages and prescription drug prices to increase. Let's face it, DIR fees are nothing more than PBMs making up for lost revenue in other areas and making sure that they're profitable. And yeah, we know how much they've increased over the years and how they proliferated. And we also know how destructive they've been to pharmacy and to pharmacists. So all of that we've got to work on and continue to work on. We can't let our foot off the gas pedal. We got to continue on because we got a lot of work to do. But I certainly am encouraged, particularly by this ruling.
Well, Congressman Buddy Carter from Georgia, we really appreciate your time today. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll see you in the next session.
Thank you very much.
So, John Vinson, welcome to the program. Welcome back to the program, I should say. We spoke a couple of months ago as the oral arguments were looming. You must be so proud of your Arkansas team right now. Now that you've had a few days to reflect on what happened, what are your thoughts?
It is definitely very positive news. It is. I know our national organizations have been fighting this fight for more than two decades, as have our state association and other state association. What a day, what a week. It's really good for our current team, but not just our current team. When you think of two decades, that goes back three CEOs before me at our state association. That goes back countless board members, pharmacists, many of whom have even transitioned, sold their stores to the next generation or moved on to other practices. There are just so many people that played a role in getting this case to be heard at the highest court in the land. It feels good to get it across the finish line, but we're so appreciative of all of our partners in every state and all those great leaders before that helped us to get us in a position to even have the case heard at the highest court in the land.
So what are your next steps?
We have probably three or four next steps. You know, the first thing is to celebrate what's happened. And we've done that. We gave us a day or two to celebrate. Now we're into the next week. The dust has settled a little bit. We are starting to evaluate and look at our existing laws that are on the books to see, you know, how does this court ruling affect our existing laws, to see if those can be enforced better, if pharmacies can appeal bad reimbursement mechanisms under the existing laws and to find some relief in employer-sponsored plans. Second thing is, while we're looking at those laws, are there any areas where those laws can be tweaked at the state level, that there are loopholes that we might have missed for some of these plans? So we're working on that. And then finally, don't forget why we're here in the first place, and move forward and provide patient care. And look and see if there are business opportunities or other opportunities in the private sector outside of the regulatory world where we can implement new models and take advantage of this new strength of the regulation to actually compete. I know there are a lot of pharmacists that are excited in our state about a new Medicare Part D plan, which is not affected by this ruling, because this ruling is specific to employer-sponsored insurance. But to actually start a Medicare Part D plan and enroll a payment model that is objective and is understandable and predictable and fair and is a win-win-win for providers, patients, and also taxpayers all together. So we don't want to forget about that. Yes, the regulation is great, but we also need to take advantage of that fair playing field to look at for private market solutions as well.
Great. Thanks, John. Scott Conner, let's bring you in. And what I want to ask you is, so this was exactly the ruling pharmacists have been hoping for. In your mind, what is the practical effect of this ruling on the everyday lives of pharmacists?
I'm going to answer that, Frank. But first of all, I want to make sure, John, I hope people are writing checks for that new building. I know you guys lost your building to a fire. And if anyone wonders about the value of their state pharmacy organizations, oh, my God, this is the textbook example. So I know APHA wrote you a check, and I would encourage everybody on this. What's your website, John? Where can they go donate to help you build that building?
Either our main website, arrx.org, or our website for the building is arrxphoenix.com. So arrxphoenix.com, arrxphoenix.com. And it's Phoenix because it's like the Phoenix Project, rising from the ashes for a new tomorrow for the next 100 years, Scott. So thank you for asking.
Well, absolutely. And you know what? We're rising from the PBM ashes, right? Just, you know, as of last week. So thank you, John, you're a true pharmacy patriot. So Frank, I think I tend to give long answers to short questions. I sometimes deviate from the script, but I think the question is, what's this really mean for pharmacists? Did I get
that's
that right,
correct.
Frank?
Yep.
this means a lot, you know, and John just talked about that. Congressman Carter talked about that. But, you know, I really look at it. You know, we've had all the pharmacy closures. We've got lots of issues. We have racial disparities in healthcare. We have pharmacy deserts because there's no community pharmacies. So this is going to help folks who want to have a business that's sustainable so they can serve their communities. But, you know, it's not just that. I mean, pharmacies in general are under so much pressure. We read a lot like the Ellen Gabler articles of work issues, workplace issues, right? So, you know, huge, high volume, unrealistic metrics that pharmacists have to do. It's because of payment models. You know, you can't, it used to be back in the day, you would make a living and you could have time to counsel patients. You could have time to do things. The payment has gotten so tight and, you know, pharmacists are actually losing money on some things because of PBM shenanigans that that's one of the huge drivers, you know? So I think this is going to have just massive implications. And just like John's going to do in Arkansas, we're going to look all over at, you know, putting the pedal in the metal. I think, Congressman Carter said, we're going to, you know, step on the gas and we're not going to let up. But I think this is just, hopefully this is the beginning of the end for PBM shenanigans. And this is so we can have state laws like John's got and a lot of other states. But, you know, this is I can't say enough on how big this is and how many opportunities. But I think every pharmacist across the country that, you know, should have breathe a sigh of relief and look forward to the future. We got a lot of bad news. You know, we've just been death by 1,000 cuts. And now this just opens us up to actually, we're outgunned, we're outmanned. John was outgunned. He was outlobbied, right? He was outlawyered, but they did it. So this has got huge practical applications. People can have a sustainable business, right? Now we go and we hit payment reform. We get insurers to pay pharmacists. You know, we have state laws for Medicaid. So while this is PBMs, it's just the sort of tip of the iceberg. Payment reform, we need to continue and we need to hit it with everything we've got.
Scott, what do you think there are a lot of beneficiaries, so to speak, to this ruling. How will employers benefit from this ruling?
That's a huge thing. This isn't just a win for pharmacy. You know, I think John said that too. This is a win for patients, of course, but this is a win for employers. This is a win for taxpayers. You know, I spent 9 years at Cleveland Clinic before I came out here to DC and Ohio. You know, we talked about all the spread pricing, $248 million that Ohio taxpayers paid to the big PBMs, and they kept that much, and it was non-transparent. They had no idea how much money was going to the PBM versus taking care of patients. So I think small employers are not immune from this as well. You know, they don't know. They know what they're paying the PBM. They don't know what the actual numbers are for how much it costs to really take care of the getting medications to patients. So this is going to be good for society. It's going to be good for healthcare. It's going to be good for taxpayers. It's going to be good for employers. So this is really and absolutely for patients.
So what is APHA prepared to do next to work with the states and Congress if necessary to take advantage of this ruling?
Yeah, you know, we are absolutely thrilled. So like John, we're celebrating. We're not going to slow down, right? And there's so many opportunities. We had a strategic planning session a couple of months ago at APHA, and the top three things on our strategic planning association were payment reform, and payment reform. That's all these things, right? It's PBM reform, it's DIR fees. And it's also, I'm looking on my wall right here at the article I had framed of Modern Healthcare cover that says pharmacists move to the center of a care revolution, where we talked, this is examples from Ohio. Again, I use a lot of Ohio examples. Arkansas is clearly the center of the world in pharmacy. So I'm not just talking Ohio because I've been there. But, you know, I know the things they're doing with getting payers to pay. You know, I'm thrilled about how this is going to help us with payment reform on so many levels. So many states, Washington has had some sort of provider status since I think 1978, and they're doing some novel things. And Micah, John's counterpart down in Tennessee's got good laws, and we got great laws in Iowa, and people are doing things, but we haven't put it all together, right? So what Antonio, who we've hired now, Antonio from Ohio, with his data company, you know, who's quoted in this article, the reason that they made the covered model healthcare is not that they did things that haven't been done in other states. It's that they did it and they talked about it and they got newspapers to cover it. So we're going to do that. And we're going to help all the states who have great things individually they're doing, you know, combine them and tell the story. And then we're taking that. I'm pointing. You can't see because this is audio. But I'm pointing. I can see the Capitol from my office. I can throw a rock to the Capitol. I can't get anything done there, but we're going to take all this data. We're going to, John, what we're doing down in Arkansas, we're going to show the benefits. We're going to show decreases in costs. We're going to show improvements in quality. We're going to, APHA is going to work with our states to be the chief marketing officer, put it all together and help with guidelines. John's got great laws he's putting together. Well, we're going to help John share them with other states.
Thanks, Scott. John, you have the final word. What does the future look like for pharmacy as a result of this?
Well, following up with what Scott said about fairness for both the patients, the pharmacists, and also the employers, I just want to give you one concrete example that I got just a couple of weeks ago. An employer in Northeast Arkansas, a prescription drug, a mom takes it to fill it at a rural pharmacy, and they're paid $50 below cost. That same prescription for that local employer, the patient has good relationship with the pharmacist. Let's see what happens if we go and fill it at a pharmacy owned by the PBM who set these rates. They're both the price setter and the price taker. When they fill it at the pharmacy locally owned by the PBM, lo and behold, they pay themselves $100 above cost. So if I'm that local employer, now this state law is enforceable. That's a deceptive trade practice. They can be fined for $10,000 a violation of paying themselves $100 above cost and paying the pharmacy where the patient really wanted to receive care $50 below cost. So it brings a fair playing field. They could have paid the local pharmacy a fair rate and saved $50. That's a win-win-win. So that's a real-world practical example. And I just want to leave you with this. One of my very first, very favorite movies, It's a Wonderful Life. At the very end, the angel, Clarence, tells George, no man is a failure who has friends. And APHA has been a great friend. But don't forget the individual that has those relationships at the ground level that can share their story. Antonio talks about the domino effect. What I want to say is any person out there that's a pharmacist, any patient out there that sees something that is not right can speak up and share that, and we can help amplify that story to get something done. Even against all odds in a David or Goliath situation, you can overcome anything when you speak the truth and you speak what is right. And what is not, you know, what is in the best interest of our patients can sometimes overcome money and Wall Street and power when those entities are not implementing what's in the best interest of society.
Hey, Frank, I know you got a follow-up question there, but I want to state the obvious. And John, I tell you, I want to thank you on behalf of our profession, our patients, as a taxpayer, as an employer who's seen my healthcare benefits at APHA go up 15% a year for what you've done. You know, I cannot overstate the impact of the relentless tenacity the Arkansas Pharmacists Association had and what a big deal this is. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you too, Scott. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Representative Carter, John Vincent, and Scott Knorr. That's it for this edition of Locked On Pharmacy. This is Frank Fortin for the American Pharmacists Association. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the American Pharmacists Association, the largest professional association of pharmacists in the United States.